First President Joe Biden weighed in on what he thinks should be done about the U.S. Senate filibuster.
Once you stop talking, you lost that, and someone could move in and say, I moved the question of. So you got to work for the filibuster.
So you're for that reform. You're for bringing back the talking filibuster.
I am. That's what it was supposed to be.
Biden speaking there with ABC's George Stephanopoulos yesterday. It's the week in Washington, where we look at several top stories in national politics. In addition to the filibuster, we'll look at what's going on around the U.S. border with Mexico, some historic cabinet confirmations, and where the Biden administration's legislative agenda is heading. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the Senate filibuster? Should it stay or should it go? What do you think about bringing back a talking filibuster instead? Not getting rid of it, but making senators actually go there and talk on the floor to put it into practice. And what questions or thoughts do you have about the politics of the filibuster? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Lauren Gambino is senior political reporter at The Guardian. Lauren, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we heard from President Biden there weighing in on the filibuster. How big an issue is this in the U.S. Senate right now? How hot is the conversation about maybe changing the filibuster?
It is the topic of conversation right now. We just heard from Biden, which was very significant because he is a long-term member of the Senate. He served for 36 years there, and he has long been considered an institutionalist who really does support these arcane procedural tactics that have been, you know, like the filibuster, and he has defended the filibuster for a long time. So this is a pretty sharp break with where he has been before. He wants to effectively, you know, overhaul this process and make it much harder for the opposition, or, you know, it's typically the minority party, to filibuster the legislation. And that's quite significant, as I said. We're also hearing from several other members of the Senate, most notably Mitch McConnell. And Mitch McConnell has issued a very stark warning to Democrats, saying, if you do away with or radically reform the filibuster, I will wage a scorched earth campaign. And I think for those following Mitch McConnell's career, you know, he means what he says. He's known for his hardball tactics. And so, you know, that was a very clear warning that he could make life very miserable, very fast for Democrats if they do choose to go down this road.
Let's give a listen to Senate Minority Leader McConnell speaking yesterday, saying, hey, here's what's coming if you do this, Democrats. Here's a taste.
Everything that Democrat Senates did, or Presidents Bush and Trump, everything the Republican Senate did to President Obama, would be child's play compared to the disaster that Democrats would create for their own priorities if they break the Senate.
And let's talk. We're going to, by the way, talk about the filibuster on the show tomorrow. I'll spend a whole half hour on it. But this talking filibuster idea, that doesn't mean you can do whatever you want without 60 votes. It just means that senators would have to be talking on the floor. I've seen the case that that could actually be even worse for a party in control, because as of right now, I just use the filibuster to put that issue on hold. If I'm filibustering out loud on the floor, I'm putting the whole Senate on hold. Do I have that right from your understanding?
That is my understanding. I think you'd see a lot more, scenes like Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, or famously Ted Cruz reading Dr. Seuss on the floor of the Senate. And, you know, certainly you have personalities in the Senate who would probably be happy to engage in those kind of tactics. So it could be a complete nightmare. At the same time, it would put the burden more on the opposition rather than the supporters. Currently, it's almost a threat. You know, supporters of the legislation have to come up with 60 votes. Now the burden would shift in a way to the opponents to really, you know, go through and block this or delay this legislation.
Talking to Lauren Gambino, Lauren Gambino, senior political reporter at The Guardian, looking at some of the top stories in national politics, including right now the filibuster and whether it should stay, go, or be changed. You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Tom is with us now in Madison. Tom, hi.
Good afternoon. I have two quick points I'd like to make. The first one is that I'm becoming convinced we don't need Congress, the Senate, or state legislators and state senators either. Give everybody a laptop, give everybody a secure connection, and let the people vote on the issues. These so-called representatives are not representative of us anyway. But the second point is that on the talking filibuster, if it could be restricted to the issue at hand, I believe it would reveal just how precious little our so-called representatives in the Senate actually know about the issues.
Tom, thanks for the call. Tom saying, Lauren, if we can make them talk, but only about the issue at hand, senators wouldn't look so good necessarily. So no reading, for example, Dr. Seuss for hours on end.
It's very possible. And certainly, you know, senators do try to defend or make the case against a piece of legislation when they do engage in a filibuster. But, you know, in the extreme examples, often after, you know, several hours, maybe you run out of things to say. But that, you know, I think if you're talking about overhauling the filibuster, that could be a part of the conversation, certainly. But, you know, the caller does raise a good point, which is some of the advocates for getting rid of the filibuster say it blocks a representative democracy from functioning, that the Senate is not, you know, it doesn't directly represent the majority of the people, and that the filibuster has actually gotten in the way of passing legislation like, you know, background checks, which are fairly popular with the American public, but just simply cannot get 60 votes in the Senate.
Thanks for that call, Tom, at 800-642-1234. But Lauren, Senator McConnell has also pointed out majorities change. And if you do this now, we might do something different if we take control. And that's got to weigh on a senator's mind. If I'm in the majority now, there's another election within 2 years always. I might be taking this power and then handing it to the other party. Is that something that slows down this kind of change?
Absolutely, that's weighing on them. And, you know, we could go back just a few years. The Democratic majority under Harry Reid in the Senate did chip away at the filibuster. And that was because the Republicans were blocking Obama's judicial and executive branch nominees. And so they decided to do away with the filibuster for these specific nominees. And McConnell warned then that this could come back to haunt you. And sure enough, Trump wins the election years later, and you know, then the Republicans ended up chipping further away at the filibuster for Supreme Court nominations. And so, you know, we've seen that come true already, and you know, you can only imagine what would happen if you truly got rid of the filibuster. It would just depend on who was in the majority.
And part of the story here, Lauren, is Democrats are passing stuff in the House that they can't get through the Senate right now. A pro-union law, for example. They're looking ahead at infrastructure, which we'll get into in a bit, a voting rights laws. Is there an issue that you think might drive Democrats in the Senate to, in order to pass it, tackle some changes to the filibuster?
That's a really good and important piece of this, because right now, actually, Democrats do not have enough votes within their own ranks to eliminate the filibuster, or, you know, overhauling it is different, and I think you'd have to see the terms of how you'd reform the filibuster, but certainly to just eliminate it, they do not have the votes. And so there are some activists and progressives who are pushing the majority leader, Chuck Schumer, they want him to just keep bringing up popular pieces of legislation to prove that Republicans will not support anything. And then the hope is that that will convince people like Senator Joe Manchin, a more conservative Democrat in the caucus who opposes getting rid of the filibuster, that might convince them that there is just no other way to pass some of these bills unless you change the filibuster. So that's their strategy. I think, you know, like you mentioned, infrastructure is fairly popular. That could push possibly some members to support eliminating the filibuster. There's also possibly gun control, which again is popular with the public, a voting rights bill. So there are some some pieces of legislation that might push this forward.
We're talking about some of the top stories in national politics with Lauren Gambino from The Guardian. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Can take your thoughts on the filibuster still. We'll talk more about that tomorrow. Also, questions, what questions do you have about Congress and its reaction to the current situation at the U.S.-Mexico border? You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue our conversation coming up next on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our talk with Lauren Gambino, senior political reporter for The Guardian. It's the week in Washington. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's take another caller or two on the filibuster before we move on. Jim is with us in River Falls. Jim, hi.
Hi. Thanks for having this program. Yeah, I think that the filibuster's been used to, keep Jim Crow policies in place. Strom Thurmond used it in, I think, 1957 to keep Eisenhower was trying to get a Voting Rights Act through, and really was gutted due to his filibustering. And, I think it's causing more problems getting the parties to cooperate than it's solving. And I think Mitch McConnell, if he were in the same position, he would get rid of the filibuster to get his way with things. So I don't think it's really solving any problems, and it lets the minority really dictate what the majority can get through. So I think it's obstructive to a functioning government at this point.
Jim, thanks a lot for that call. Now, Senator McConnell, Lauren, didn't get rid of the filibuster in the similar opportunity. Narrow Republican majority in the Senate, Republican control of the House and the White House. As you mentioned, they did get rid of it for the U.S. Supreme Court nominees, but they kept it in place for that couple of years where they had the whole shebang. But like Democrats do now, a not 60 vote majority in the Senate.
That's exactly right. And that is a point that Mitch McConnell made yesterday, saying that they resisted the temptation and the urging of Donald Trump to get rid of the filibuster when they had the power. And he, Mitch McConnell was very happy with the number of judicial nominees he was able to push through under his leadership with Donald Trump. And so I think there is a question about what Mitch McConnell would do if he wasn't kind of getting everything he wanted with a Republican president in power. So I think there's something specific about the dynamics of his tenure as a Senate leader under Donald Trump. That being said, I think, we just don't know what McConnell would do if the situations were reversed. It is a 50-50 narrowly divided Senate. Democrats want to say that they have this mandate to make sure that Joe Biden's agenda is enacted, while Republicans say, look, they gave you very narrow, the American people gave you a very narrow majority for a reason, and that's so that you have to listen to us in the minority. It's just too hard to say, I think.
Thanks for that call. We're going to move on from the filibuster now. Lots of other stuff going on. We'll have more on the filibuster tomorrow on the show. Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas testified today before a House of Representatives committee talking about the recent rise of the number of asylum seekers at the U.S. southern border with Mexico. I want to give a listen to Mayorkas answer questions from Republican Michael McCaul, a Republican from Texas, who said that the rise in immigrants at the border constitute a crisis of President Biden and the administration's making. Here's a listen to the response.
A crisis is when a nation is willing to rip a 9-year-old child out of the hands of his or her parent and separate that family to deter future migration. That to me is a humanitarian crisis. And what the president has committed to and what I am committed to and execute is to ensure that we have an immigration system that works and that migration to our country is safe, orderly, and humane.
Lauren, can you talk a little more about the back and forth between Republicans in Congress and the Biden White House on the situation at the border?
Yes. So what you can hear there is clearly Mayorkas is trying to draw a bright red line between the policies of Donald Trump and the immigration policies of the new Biden administration. But, what we are seeing at the border is this, you know, huge increase in the number of unaccompanied minors. There is this massive backlog, and Republicans are saying that it's Biden's policies that are drawing migrants to the border at this time. You know, it's hard to say for sure that it's, you know, these types of influxes can happen with changes in the administration, but it is really hard to pin it on just policy. You know, often migrants aren't watching CNN, they're not watching these hearings, and they are, you know, being pushed for environmental factors, for poverty, for violence, these reasons that go far beyond U.S. immigration law. But the broader point stands, Biden is facing a real political crisis for sure, because Republicans are now seizing on this issue. Immigration obviously is very important to the Republican base, and it's something that really riles up the base. And so you're seeing them hammer Biden for his policies, saying that his rollback of all of Trump's immigration policies are sort of allowing this to fester at the border. You're also seeing Biden being, you know, attacked by progressives on the left who say he's not doing enough from a humanitarian perspective. So he's really squeezed on this issue, and the administration keeps asking, give us time, we need time, we want to set up processing centers in Central America so that these migrants don't have to make this long journey. But again, you know, these sort of messaging isn't actually reaching the people who are making these long, arduous, often dangerous journeys, and that is causing it's certainly a humanitarian situation at the border.
We're talking to Lauren Gambino from The Guardian, looking at some of the top stories in national politics. Some cabinet confirmations still going on. Lauren, this week, Deb Haaland of New Mexico, the first indigenous person to be confirmed for a cabinet position. Secretary of the Interior, a very significant one. Can you talk some about that selection?
Yes. So, you know, Biden came in promising a historic cabinet, and he has certainly delivered on several fronts, nominating people who are the first to lead their department, or like in the case of Deb Haaland, the first ever Native American cabinet secretary. And it's an incredibly important role. She will, given the history of the Interior Department and its relationship with America's Native American populations. And so I think, you know, she's going to be central to Biden's, a lot of his environmental policies that, you know, that will involve the Interior Department. And that was a big piece of the contentious aspect of her confirmation. Republicans thought she was far too much of an activist, and they were very wary of her anti-fracking positions. But she was able to convince a handful of Republicans, and she did ultimately pass with the support of four Republican senators.
And then another vote today, Katherine Tai as top U.S. trade envoy. This unanimous, nobody voted against, which is not something you can say all that often these days, it seems like. So a little partisan agreement, or bipartisan agreement there.
Absolutely. And you are seeing that for a number of his nominees. Not all of them have been contentious, although certainly complete support is truly very rare in the Senate. But there have, you know, Biden has been putting forward a number of nominees that he was guessing, and he was correct, Republicans could support. However, of course, there are currently Javier Becerra, the Attorney General of California, is waiting for his final confirmation vote. And he was a very contentious nomination for Secretary of Health and Human Services. That's obviously an incredibly important role as we are in the middle of the coronavirus pandemic, and Biden is rolling out all of these new policies around the pandemic. But, you know, Republicans say he doesn't have the correct experience to lead. He doesn't have a medical background, and that he should to lead this department. And they're obviously very wary because, as Attorney General of California, he led many of the lawsuits against Donald Trump, challenging his various policies over the last 4 years. So he does appear to be on track for confirmation. He passed a procedural vote today. So we do expect him to be confirmed. But just again, it shows you the sort of case-by-case, slow-moving process that it is to assemble a presidential cabinet.
And now you mentioned the coronavirus relief package and economic relief package. President Biden, Vice President Harris on the road this week to promote a lot of the elements of that. Around the corner next, maybe infrastructure. And this is something that was talked about over the last 4 or 5 years now. What's the talk about infrastructure funding right now?
So infrastructure was so popular, it became this running joke that every week was infrastructure week. And Biden is sort of coming in promising that finally this year will be infrastructure year. He does want to bring forward an infrastructure bill. I'd say the biggest issue, though, is that everyone, all Republicans, Democrats, they say they're very supportive. We need to fix the nation's infrastructure, roads, bridges, online networks. We need to get all of this needs a complete overhaul. But nobody seems to be in agreement about what the framework of the bill should actually look like, how expensive it should be. And so there's a lot of competing interests here on what an infrastructure bill might actually look like. Biden has been holding some fairly high level meetings with the relevant committee leaders in the House and Senate. And, we know that Nancy Pelosi has directed the different committees to begin working on what she said hopefully would be a bipartisan bill. But as of right now, there are so many more questions than answers about what this bill might look like.
We'll leave it there. Lauren, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Lauren Gambino, senior political reporter for The Guardian. We talked to her today for our Week in Washington, looking at what's happening around the Senate filibuster, the situation at the U.S.-Mexico border, and other big stories in national politics. We'll have more conversation about the Senate filibuster, its past, present, and maybe future, coming up tomorrow on the show.